Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. 6:11 in the morning, 720 WGN, the Steve Cochran Show. On what hopes to be a balmy day, 50 degrees today for the high, 53 tomorrow, possibly 56.
Balmy?
Tuesday.
Balmy?
Hey, considering what we've been at, I'll take it. Heavy rains expected, though, a little later on tonight.
Oh, nice.
We'll be checking with Tim McGill throughout the morning as well. All right, top story, big story of the week, and pretty much this whole NCAA tournament, Loyola.
I mean, can you imagine 2 weeks ago today, we sat here going over the brackets that had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Loyola's an 11 seed. They're going to play. And I know you picked them, so I'm giving you full credit for this. But how many people honestly thought that they would be getting ready to play in the Final Four?
No, not at all. I had them losing before they got to the Elite Eight. So Sweet 16. And I thought that was a push, too.
And that was a leap of faith.
You know, what do you think it is about this team? Is it truly a team effort, or are there one or two real standouts kind of carrying that?
No, it's not. It's really a balanced team. It's a really well-coached team, a disciplined team. They share the ball really well. I mean, they're a fun team to watch. If you're a student of the game or you're just a fan of the game, you have to enjoy watching them play because they really do things the right way. And, I mean, it's a great story. It's not just something that people in Chicago are following. They've captured the imagination of the nation, which is really cool because how many people had even heard of Loyola? I've heard some fans complain a little bit. Why do they have to keep saying Loyola Chicago? But the reality is there are several Loyola universities around the country. There's Loyola Marymount out in L.A. There's Loyola of Maryland. There's some others. And so to differentiate, it's good for Loyola to have that specification made that they are Loyola University Chicago, which is, after all, what they are.
Good for Chicago, too.
It's good for Chicago. Sure it is.
When was the last time a team from the state of Illinois went to the Final Four?
It was the Illini.
It was 05.
Yes.
Okay, so this is amazing for the state.
And the last time a team from Chicago went to the Final Four was DePaul in 1979, and we're going to talk to Joey Meyer later at 7:10 this morning because he went through that, but that was a much different scenario because that was a really talented DePaul team that was ranked going into the tournament. Here you're talking about a team that wasn't even in the top 25, wouldn't have made the tournament had they not won the Missouri Valley Conference tournament in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And here they are, now one of the Final Four teams still standing.
Yeah, this has to be super cool for you. I mean, this is your forte. This is your realm.
I think it's cool for anybody, even if you're a casual fan of the game. You have to enjoy this. You have to appreciate the enthusiasm the fans are showing, the way everybody's gotten into it. I mean, I know people who, they've never even heard of Loyola basketball.
And now they do.
Now they're very aware of it. They like watching this team. Sister Jean has become a folk hero.
She's not adorable. I love every time they show her on TV. She was like the second or third most tweeted phrase in the past week. Sister Jean. Or hashtag, I'm sorry.
And searched.
Yeah, and the bobblehead story is the one that we had. Well, we're going to have that throughout the day. But most sold bobblehead or most purchased bobblehead in U.S. history.
And Loyola has given permission. I think I saw like 25 companies for permission to do like Sister Jean shirts and stuff like that.
Could you see Sister Jean's going, looking up to heaven going, now? Really? How about 20 years ago?
The one thing, I mentioned this to Steve off the air on Friday, the thing I really like that I've seen so far from Loyola and its fans is there hasn't been any resentment of bandwagon jumpers. Because sometimes, you know, I heard from a lot of old Hawks fans when the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in 2010, mm-hmm. and their popularity soared and was like, well, where y'all been? You know, right. Why are you jumping on now? But I haven't heard any of that kind of resentment from Loyola fans. They're like, hey, come on, there's plenty of room, join the party.
I don't ever understand why anyone, you know, I'd be thrilled if people jumped on our bandwagon.
If you follow a team, why would you not want more people following your team?
Absolutely. Right? And so, I used to call them the Harry Potter scarves, but I love the Sister Jean scarves too. We're also hearing that if you ordered a Sister Jean bobblehead, it won't be ready till June.
Okay, so I can wait.
Right. Championship first, and then the bobblehead.
Wow. Well, okay. One game.
Right. One game at a time.
Look at the next one.
Father Dave. Again, Joey Meyer coming up after the 7 o'clock hour as well. It's the Steve Cochran Show. We have lots to do today.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, as you guys were just talking about, Loyola of Chicago, the one thing that jumped out of the weekend is we're going to have to get Sister Jean a gig at Zany's. When asked by a reporter what she gave up for Lent, she said losing.
Fantastic.
Losing. Dave, somebody brought up to me this weekend, and I think I might have been worried, and said, well, she's 98. She's still comfortable flying? I mean, apparently, right?
Yeah, apparently so. She travels with the team. They fly.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, physically, she must be, you know, could she play? If they need her, could she play?
Put it past her.
Yeah, she's got the energy, man.
The good thing is they really don't need her.
Not right now.
They're pretty good.
Loyola, Michigan, and that will be much more interesting than in any other year because of Loyola. Loyola makes an 11 seed much more fascinating because of Sister Jean, because of the story of this team.
Well, and they're only the fourth 11th seed to make the Final Four.
What were the odds that they would make the Final Four at the beginning? Can you find that anywhere? Can you look on what we call the internet and see if you could find that story before the tournament started?
I'd call Vegas.
Could you call Brent Musburger?
Yes, I'll call Brent.
Okay.
His guy in the desert.
That was item number one. Next, kids all over the country rallied for gun reform at the March for Our Lives. Chicago March started in Union Park. The crowds were humongous. There's photos that if you have time today to waste time at work, this isn't a time waster. This is something you ought to see because it should do your heart good. You look around the country to see all these kids that lined up. We'll get into the idiotic thing that former Senator Santorum. Oh, we get music for this?
Yeah, that was for me. I thought we might.
You thought
we had
some theme music for it?
Yep.
Former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum said over the weekend.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it.
Not great. Quack. Stormy Daniels, 60 Minutes interview last night. We'll just make you sad. But we'll talk about that in greater detail later as well. At least 64 people were killed in a fire in a shopping mall in Siberia, including many children. We don't have any other details.
No, it's just a horrendous story. They say dozens, at least 53 people dead, dozens injured.
Well, it says 64.
Okay, I've said 53 from CNN.
Okay, well, let's go with your number then.
Okay, just to be safe, yeah.
53 people killed at a shopping mall fire in Siberia. Mm-hmm. One more. There is a Kickstarter campaign for Slice of Sauce. Now, I love ketchup. Anybody else love ketchup here? I know you don't have it on a hot dog, blah, blah, blah. But do you love ketchup?
I like ketchup.
Yeah, do you like ketchup?
I don't. Not a ketchup fan.
Okay.
Ketchup's the worst, too? According to us in the booth.
Ketchup's the worst.
What?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't like ketchup at all.
Steve Grzanich, ketchup?
Love ketchup, yes.
Yeah. A slice of sauce, all natural, no mess, slice of ketchup. I don't need a slice of ketchup. A slice of cheese, slice of pizza.
Would that?
I'm intrigued.
Like, slice of cake.
That be like Jello?
I guess.
Because it has to be...
It's got to be gelatinized.
Congealed to be...
Yeah, so I'm thinking, you know those like fruit roll-ups...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking that's what that looks like.
I'm thinking I don't want to eat that.
Yeah, that seems kind of gross.
So, and I don't know why you have to fix ketchup. Yeah. What's wrong with ketchup that it needs to be fixed?
And it's all water anyway.
It could be messy sometimes.
It could be made, you know, better. because it's not good.
Well, listen, you don't even get a vote. You two, you don't get a vote in the producer's booth.
Yes, we do. We certainly
do. No, you don't. No vote. No, this is democracy, and I'm in charge. That's your top six at six at 6:23.
That's it!
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Woke up after midnight, both my arms and legs were sore. On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before.
Time for Dr. Kevin Most and
I
sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. You can leave John singing. That's fine. We'll just continue with Dr. Kevin Most, who joins us now. How great is Sister Jean, Doc?
Sister Jean is wonderful. And you know what? The other thing I think that's so cool about that, Steve, is at the end of the game, the respect the players show to her as well. They're not out there, you know, doing all their stuff and dance. They go over and they give her a hug, and I think it's cool.
I was a little surprised, Dave, to hear that she tore the locker room up at halftime, but that seemed to really inspire him in the second half.
It fired him up. Yeah. So, yeah. Actually, they were doing just fine at halftime.
All right, so, Doc, we got a bunch of things.
Hey, if you listen to Dean Richards yesterday, he had Brian Anderson on, who did an unbelievable job of, at least in my opinion, of discussing Sister Jean. And Sister Jean should not be looked at as a mascot for Loyola, you know, and some people, unfortunately, kind of put her in that realm. But it was great. But did Dave talk about Kansas by any chance? Because I had to get out of the car.
Well, a couple of things. First off, I don't look as a mascot to me as an all-encompassing term of inclusion and all that. I don't think it's a term that we put her in a suit with a funny head.
Right.
But I understand she does much more for the school than that.
Yeah.
And you're the first person I thought of last night when Kansas went on a run in that overtime as you were sure jumping around your house like a giddy schoolgirl.
Yeah, I'm not a really good watcher of basketball games. I get more nervous. I don't jump around. I like pace. But it was good to see. You know, I love programs that still have seniors in them. You know, you look at the Kentuckys, the one-and-dones, and I like seeing seniors play. It's watching Devontae Graham and Siv play.
That's the kid that scored all 13 in overtime?
No, that was Newman.
Newman.
Seinfeld's neighbor scored 13 in overtime?
Newman. That's it.
Newman.
Yep.
Doc, I have to ask, did you think Grayson Allen's shot was going into the buzzer, though?
You know what? As much as I dislike Grayson Allen, I was afraid that was going to go in. And then when they showed you the replay, it was like, how did it not go in?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm sure from a Jayhawks point of view, it's because God didn't want Duke to win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sister Jean was on their side.
Rejected. Sponsor. Well, you know, and you got your 1 and 2 seeds going against each other next weekend.
Number one seeds.
Oh, they're
two
both ones.
They're both ones.
Yep. Oh, okay. So that'll be the game that everybody's paying attention to while Loyola beats Michigan.
Yep. They can. They're that good, I think.
So. Try and go against Sister Jean at this point. She knows where you live. Again, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. We got several things to hit here, starting with do you live in a healthy county? This is the Illinois rankings of health by county. Where did Cook County come in?
Cook County for the state came in at number 52.
Well, that can't be good.
No, you know, it's kind of middle of the road there. And
how many counties do we have in the state?
I think 104, actually. I think it's right in the middle of the road.
Okay.
But this website, and if you haven't seen it, it's really worth going. It's the entire country, so it really gives you a good view of health. Because we talk, Steve, we've talked numerous times about the Affordable Care Act and health coverage, but the impacts go beyond just having an insurance card. And this study will just show you the disparities of health within a state and within our country. And it's actually pretty fascinating if you get into stuff like this. It's amazing the differences.
102 counties are being told by the newsroom, and Steve Grzanich reporting on the number of counties. What county did you grow up in, Andrea?
Cook.
All right, so you were in Cook. Mm-hmm. You were on the edge of Cook.
Yep,
right. Were you on the healthy edge?
I think so. Far southwestern,
that
bordering with Will. So I think it is a little healthier.
What's the main criteria, Doug?
Well, they looked at about 42 different things, which is kind of interesting because we don't think about health that way. You know, they looked at housing and the safety of housing. They looked at the ability to have transportation. They looked at air quality, water quality, food sources, education, graduation rates, unemployment, violent crime. All those things impact our health. It's not just, can I get to the doctor? They looked at the ratios of how many doctors per individual. They looked at how many mental health care workers per individual. They looked at low birth weight. So they looked at a lot of things to come up with a picture of what we would deem to be health.
All right. What about the other collar counties around Cook? How did they do?
Yeah, you know, Will was number 9. So, you know, DuPage was number 1 and has been in the past as well. So here, if you look at just
DuPage, home of Central DuPage Hospital, a fine part of the Northwestern Health System.
Yes, that's true. And I'd say we'll take a portion of that credit. But we also have DuPage County Health Department, which is phenomenal and has really done well. But if you look at, like Andrea said, DuPage, Will, and Cook, you have number 1, number 9, and number 52. So, you know, the disparities right there are pretty stunning, to be honest.
Do we know if, like, L.A. County and New York City as well, if the biggest cities have similar mid-level rankings because of, you know, the crime and stuff that goes with being in a big city?
Exactly, because of the size of them as well. But it's interesting when you look at these, and it's fun because you can compare counties. So you could compare Chicago to New York. You could compare Chicago to L.A. County. And it'll give you a good viewpoint of where you sit. And, you know, I took Cook County and compared it to the least healthy county in West Virginia and the least healthy county in Louisiana. And it's unbelievably fascinating to me, the disparity of what we have for healthcare in this country, and yet we're talking more about the Affordable Care Act and the ability to have quote unquote insurance.
And most of New York is in Kings County, Manhattan, and around that area. For those of you scoring at home,
yeah. Oh, Steve, we were talking. We actually teased this segment talking about vaping. So I think we're going to talk a little bit more about vaping now. We see this all the time. People walking along Michigan Avenue vaping. I've even seen some people in restaurants doing it. I actually didn't think that was legal because of the no smoking rule. But is vaping a safe way to quit smoking, Doc?
Well, it's interesting, Andrea. That was the big thing. The big thing was, there's so many carcinogens, like we talked last week. There's so many carcinogens in tobacco. Let's give people a safer way to get nicotine. And so vaping came out. And vaping certainly is more safe than cigarettes, but it's not totally safe. You know, there still are carcinogens in there. Obviously, nicotine is in there, but nicotine is not known to cause cancer. But they have some heavy metals in there as well. So the safety of vaping is okay. And the ability for people to quit if that's what they're going to use it for is certainly a great way to do it.
I'm being told by one of our helpful listeners I misspoke. Kings County is Brooklyn. New York County is Manhattan. That's going to cost me points in our final tally.
Yes, it will.
Kids vaping more than adults, or are adults doing this too?
No, kids are vaping more than adults, and that's probably one of the bigger problems that we're starting to see now is kids abusing it. If you look at marijuana use across the country, we know that that is going up, not only because of medicinal marijuana, just because of access to it. And actually vaping, there's ways that you can make the THC in marijuana into an oil and use it for vaping. And the concern there is that, you know, people will say, oh, I can smell somebody that's smoking marijuana, or they walk by them, oh, I can smell marijuana. With vaping, you can put whatever flavor you want in there. So it'll smell like strawberries, or it'll smell like mint. So the loss of the ability to notice it by odor is gone.
Is it a myth that one leads to the other? Vaping leads to smoking, or smoking leads to vaping when you're trying to taper off, and that could lead to marijuana use?
Yeah, you know, the thought is that it's not so much a transportation drug where if I start vaping, I'm going to end up smoking marijuana. These are usually kids that are already smoking marijuana and they found the way there. Now, also people will say, well, marijuana is not a gateway drug on its way to heroin or on its way to opium or on its way to methamphetamine. And those studies are varied all over the board. But to be honest with you, it's probably more that kids are now going to have what they consider a way that they won't get caught by smoking marijuana.
You know, bad knees are a gateway drug to ibuprofen. I don't know if you know that or not. Bad knees lead to ibuprofen.
Yes.
All right, when we come back. Stand-up desks. Should you stand up at work? Is this good for you? We heard about a year ago that sitting is one of the most dangerous things you can do if you're stuck sitting all day long. Stick around. More Dr. Kevin Most coming up in just a second. Back to Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. When we move to the new facilities for this radio station, Doc, at, what is it, 303 East Wacker?
Yes.
If anybody wants to zip over there and finish drywalling, we're going to have a stand-up control board, which means we'll be able to adjust the height of what amounts to the work desk here, you know, where all the buttons and switches and stuff are. So standing desk, healthy?
Yeah, it's interesting that they're going to invest that in you.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I'm more concerned about the people. I'm more concerned about the people that work 8 hours a day versus those of you who work a couple hours a day, and you're standing because you can still see your cars running, and you know you're
to make sure we can get out on time.
Correct.
No, yeah. But you said before the worst thing you can do is just sit. So this gives you an opportunity to circulate.
Absolutely. It is. It's great that they're doing that because it is so important that we don't sit for long periods of time. Like you said, it is so unhealthy for us from so many different points of view. Back, the chance of blood clots. I mean, a lot of things. Sitting is a terrible position for our body to be in. So, but yeah, the stand-up desks and the stand-up control board is going to be really nice. I mean, that is exactly what we need people to do now.
So that being said, obviously, you're going to be standing. Is it better to stand or walk around a little bit and then go back to standing? Or because inevitably, we're all going to be sitting at some point.
Yep. And you hit it right on the head. You know, ideally, the thing is to continue to move as much as you can. Now, some people don't have that ability to do that because of their job. And it was interesting. A study came out, it was probably about 10 days ago now, that said, boy, standing, you know, the standing work desk can cause heart disease. And people like, oh, wait a second, now I don't want this. And we have to make sure we understand that the study there showed individuals who have to stand for 8 to 10 hours a day. Think of bank tellers. Think of people that are standing in a service area where they're standing the entire time.
Okay, that's not a standing work desk then. That's a bad headline.
Correct. And they're not moving, so they're standing and not moving, and it makes the heart work harder because the blood pools in the lower legs. But it is great that they're going to do that for you.
Oh, listen, don't try to get out of it now. Well, you insulted us, and it was funny.
Right? It's not actually an adjustable thing. It's set at standing height, and then you'll have high chairs to sit at.
I thought it was adjustable.
It's not adjustable, yeah. I know that's what you kept asking for, but it's
the newsroom is actually adjustable. Oh, okay. Like you can start high and then go low.
I think where Steve is, our host here, is not adjustable. But you know what we need, Doc, most? We need, you know, dental chairs, how they have, like, your knees are a little bit elevated.
Yep.
That's what we need everywhere, because I do great work laying in bed with my knees bent up and the computer on my lap.
Uh-huh. I'll say. So you want some sort of angled degree situation?
I want more of a lounge chair in the office where my knees are propped up a little. I can put the laptop right on my lap.
Well, you know, the standard desk is going away. The standard desk and cubicle.
We can all just be in dental chairs.
Well, the concern is that we are eventually going to evolve into some sort of curved back, kind of the opposite of the Cro-Magnon poster, where you went from this curved back creature to standing upright. Now we're going to go back to being curved backed and in some sort of crouching position because everybody slouches.
Especially when we're on our phones, too, looking down.
Yeah, neck down,
right?
Bent over, right. Yeah.
Can you see Sandberg though on a chair like that, like a chaise lounge chair?
You know, if you got her a Mai Tai, probably
fanning her and Joe like fanning her.
Yeah.
Don't you think productivity would drop a little bit if we were all in chaise lounges?
Probably.
Yeah.
Though there are certain industries where productivity couldn't drop much further.
Good point.
What's the county health website again?
The County Health website is countyhealthrankings.org.
So, countyhealthrankings.org. And Patrick's got a vaping question. Patrick, say hi to Dr. Most.
Hey, Dr. Most, how you doing?
Good. Patrick, how about yourself?
Fantastic. First of all, I've been listening to your show, well, Steve and everybody, for a while.
Thank you for that.
Actually, love you guys.
Thank you.
I have a question because I have a 16-month-old at home. And I also have a six-year-old at home. I'm a smoker right now, trouble kicking it. And I know that the smoke on my clothes can affect his respiratory system, especially the 16-month-old.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know if maybe vaping, if that gets in my clothes, if that's as bad when I'm holding him, because we're trying to be very cautious, but he's had respiratory issues, you know, RSV and other things. So,
well, first off, Patrick, I give you credit as a dad for worrying about this, but for your own health, you ought to get off it, obviously. But, Doc, what's the answer to that?
Yeah, it's a great question, and really think about it. When you have a young child like that, you do not want them to be exposed to anything. So obviously getting off the cigarettes as much as you can and going to the vaping is better for you, because the nicotine, and there's not as much quote-unquote secondhand smoke. The heavy metals and things that we see in vaping are in very small numbers and are usually stay in your body. So there's not a lot of exposure that we'd be concerned about for a child. So out of those two evils, that vaping is definitely the less and probably the safest for your child.
Can't we get them on Chantix or something to help them along?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's so many different ways to quit smoking right now. And to be honest with you, having a 16-month-old is probably the strongest one right there.
Yeah.
I
mean, my main concern, obviously, unfortunately, is not necessarily for myself. I mean, fortunately for him, you know, I mean.
Well, it's great motivation. It's great motivation to do it for you as well.
And it's that addiction to nicotine is why you always want to smoke, and that hand-to-mouth motion. Both of those you can do with vaping, and you'll certainly decrease the health risk to your child, and more importantly, the health risk to yourself as well.
Well, that hand-to-mouth thing, Patrick, just slap yourself in the face every time you want to smoke.
My wife took
a carrot there.
Yep. Thanks, man. I appreciate you listening, too, Patrick. Thank you for that. Doc, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. It's Dr. Kevin Most. Thank you, sir.
You got it. Take care.
Who, by the way, thinks that we don't deserve a stand-up desk. You know what? He's not wrong. Joey Meyer on how Loyola's going to do. Joey and his sidekick, Dave Ennett, will kick that around coming up. Did I get that backwards?
His sidekick?
Did I get that backwards? I might have gotten that backwards.
No.
Made it before 7 at 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. But I know I'm not one singer.
/7:13, Loyola, the Ramblers, going to the Final Four. But that's not enough, is it?
Oh, no.
You're never happy with just the Final Four. I mean, you've come this far, you might as well win the darn thing.
Of course.
Joey Meyer, your legendary basketball coach and sidekick. Analyst, basketball guru, expert. Mm-hmm. Tall guy.
All those things.
Yeah, all those things. Mm-hmm. And a swell guy joins us now. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning, Steve. And Mr. Ennett, sir.
How are you?
Nice to talk to you again.
I'm doing good.
Are these guys on an epic run that can't be stopped, or is Michigan going to be too much for them?
Yeah, they can beat Michigan. I've seen Michigan in person a lot. I've only had the opportunity to see Loyola play once in person. But watching them on TV, I can't believe how well they're playing. I mean, if you said this is the way we need to play basketball to win, that's the way they're playing.
Yeah, it's really textbook, Joe. I mean, you and I watch a lot of college basketball over the course of the season, but in terms of their sense of where they are on the court, the sense of where each guy is, and the what's the term, that connectivity that they seem to have. I mean, it's really remarkable.
You know, I got to see him in person against Missouri State in the middle of the year, and I came away saying, that's a team I don't want to play if I'm a coach in the NCAA tournament. They got the capabilities of winning a couple games. Now, being perfectly honest, I never thought they were capable of going to Final Four. At that time, I just thought they were really a tough team, really well coached. But I do have to get one thing out here right away. I am pulling for Loyola extra hard for a reason that nobody else is.
What's that?
That's Porter Moser is a former Ray Meyer basketball camper.
Is that right?
So, yes, he was up at my dad's camp, and I remember when he was real young. So it's just kind of an extra our whole family is texting back and forth. A Coach Ray camper is doing really well, so I got a little extra motivation.
You know, and he seems like such a good human being. Was he a good kid?
Yeah, he really was. Really motivated. And you can see, you know, the way he prances the sideline?
Yeah.
That's the kind of the way he was as a kid, a very energetic, very intense for somebody that young. And it shows in his way he coaches the game. And it's just a real, it's fun to watch their teams play. I don't even care if you're just a basketball person, just seeing it for the first or second time. And you got to appreciate how they play so unselfishly and how they play for each other so well.
You coached against Rick Majerus. You knew him very well. Do you see a lot of the Rick Majerus pedigree in Porter Moser?
For people who don't know, Porter was Rick's assistant at St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really do. Now, they're a little different in body composition now.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
A little bit, and I used to tell the story, I go out and visit Rick in Utah, and I come back 5 pounds heavier. But he, great coach, great person. I loved Rick. And they are similar, and they're very intense. And you can see it, right? I mean, you can see it on the sideline. If you're at a game, if you're watching TV, watch how he moves up and down. Now, Rick didn't move that well, but he had the same kind of intensity. The attention to detail was just unbelievable with Rick, and Porter obviously is showing those same characteristics.
Joe, you were part of the last Chicago team to go to the Final Four. Of course, Illinois did go and a couple of times, and most recently in 05, but you went with that DePaul team in 1979, a team which, you know, as I've looked back on the years I've been in Chicago and covering college sports, there are a couple of teams which have really captured the city's imagination. That one, the 1995 Northwestern football team that went to the Rose Bowl. Obviously, this Loyola team seems to have a lot in common with that DePaul team, except, correct me if I'm wrong, that DePaul team, you won like 25, 26 games. You were in the top 20 going into the tournament. It wasn't suddenly you get in the tournament and get hot and pull off all these upsets.
You're right. I think we were sixth. We had four losses, so we were... The thing that we did, we beat UCLA, who was to go to the Final Four, who was the team. And so we pulled the major, major upset to get to the Final Four. But yeah, we were ranked. This run is unbelievable, Loyola. You got to give them a ton of credit. You know why? One, they're mid-major, okay? And I don't know if you use that term, but I'm using it. But it was so unexpected that they were able to play. But the thing that's really is, they play well. It's not like, you know, major upset the way they played or they threw in 33s. They outplayed people. I mean, they were the better team each night. And that's just amazing to me. They're the better team.
Well, they just look like they were getting good on Saturday. They're just dominant. Just ran up and down the court. What kind of game does Sister Jean have, do you think? If we throw her a basketball now, is she ready to go?
Honesty is the best policy. I think maybe her playing days are over.
You mean her best days? You mean maybe she's slightly past her prime, but you wouldn't count her out from three. Is that what you're saying, Coach?
Boy, the Lord would have to help a lot on that. those rosary beads would have to be working real hard.
You never know.
But you know, you're a DePaul team, and obviously in a much different role, but Coach Ray was the symbol of your team and a guy who I think had drew so much affection from around the country.
Absolutely.
Just the way Sister Jean has with Loyola. It's kind of cool.
You know, it really is. And the common thread between those two, my dad said the rosary every day. And
look at that.
He used to have his hand in his pocket, and he'd be saying the Hail Marys. My mom used to say, people are going to think you're senile. You can't move your lips like that. You're talking to yourself. We used to laugh. So
if you're going to mumble, at least it's for the right reason. And if you're Michigan, you don't want this game. The last team you wanted to face was Loyola coming into this. You would have taken Kansas State in a heartbeat.
You know, here's what I'm telling you right now, and I know the feeling, and I actually woke up with a feeling of excitement. You're so excited to get there, you would be playing the Cavaliers right now and be happy.
Yeah.
Some of the fans probably worry about that, and maybe the coaches, the players, they got blinders on. They're not going to overlook Loyola. They're not going to be intimidated. They're not going to be worried. I mean, they're just trying to win one game. You have an excitement when you get to the Final Four. I don't know if I can even describe it. And what those kids are going through right now up at Northside, that's just pure joy. And then can you be focused again? Sure, you can be focused again. You're just, you got that adrenaline going. You're so excited to play.
And nobody's expected him to go this far. All they got to do is go out and have fun. Just go play basketball. Just have fun.
You know, that's true, but you ask them privately, that they're expected to win now. They're not going in now as, hey, we've done our job.
No. They're not phoning it in. I'm just saying the pressure doesn't exist because they don't have those expectations on their shoulders from an outward standpoint. And they got the secret weapon, man. They got Sister Jean.
That's right.
I'm going to tell you, though, when you do walk out there and there's 80,000 people in the stands, you do get a little nervous.
A little bubbly.
Just a little nervous.
Good talking to you, Coach, and I think about your dad a lot, but listen, it's great getting some insight on this game.
I appreciate you guys having me.
See you later. That's Thanks. Coach Joey Meyer. You guys have some fun all season long.
Absolutely.
And you called that Northwestern win over Michigan.
Yeah, and Northwestern played really well that night. I think it was kind of a wake-up call for Michigan, too. They haven't lost since.
Right.
And so I think it's going to be a great game, but Joey's right. Definitely, Loyola can win this game. And, I mean, at this point, who does want to play Loyola? I don't think Kansas or Villanova wants to play them.
Nobody. How much do you think CBS/TNT is hoping for Loyola to win?
They
want Sister Jean on Monday night.
No kidding.
No question.
7:21, we'll come back. We got to talk about two unfortunate things from the weekend. One is a porn star, the other is a former senator from Pennsylvania, and still to come, Ryan Nobles as well. Breakfast with the Blackhawk later. I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but is this the Patrick Kane of the future?
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Sakura, this kid, a lot of interest. And your newest Blackhawk will be on, and it's going to be good to talk about some good news with the Hawks. And so we'll do that coming up. Also, later on in the studio, we got a little birthday thing we're going to do. And actually on time. And it doesn't involve the Hooters gift card. It really doesn't this time. It's 7:22. What's coming up?
And, well, let's stick with the interesting news of the weekend. Two state audits found the state of Illinois is missing some money.
What?
That story and more coming up at 7:30 from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
I think you came here with a great spirit for Loyola, and so just go ahead and set the world on fire.
Well, she was born like a Jesuit on a TV screen. I said, don't cheer, just say prayers, please. You are the nun.
You are the nun.
She says, I am the nun.
Everyone knows who Sister Jean is. When she walks, eyes turn.
Sister always told me, be careful what you do. Don't go around breaking commandments.
You did so well.
Sister always told me, be careful who you play. And be careful when you lose. Because the carbon knows the truth. Hey! Sister Jean is not my mother. She's just a man who happens to be a nun.
Pretty good, huh?
She's coming, everybody stops.
Pretty good.
Says, I am the nun. Oh, yeah. I pray to Loyola one.
God, don't forget about the Loyola Ramblers. We'd like to see a big W.
Great would it be if she moonwalked into a San Antonio? Come on.
Why not?
That was great.
7:28. I was going to do the other stuff from the weekend. I don't want to now.
No, because I'm not happy.
We're upbeat. I don't want to. We'll talk about Rick Santorum, and we'll talk about Stormy Daniels, and we'll talk about the other stuff we have to talk about, but not now. We'll come back in a moment and get your headlines next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
7:40, Ryan Nobles joins us, and we love having Ryan on the show. Ryan Nobles from CNN. Ryan has worked, the only one who's worked more consecutive days in a row is Andrea. Ryan just keeps working and working and working. Give Andrea a hard time because she's doing TV all weekend. We told her to take a day off, and she goes, why? Ryan doesn't.
That's right. My hero.
Andrea, I took yesterday off, so you could have taken Sunday off.
Oh, you know what? Maybe in April. We'll take maybe a baby in April.
Yeah, set something up for the month.
That'll be a goal.
All right, so let's get the creepy out of the way here first. Kieran McDougal last Wednesday or Thursday sat down with Anderson Cooper and told him what her relationship with Donald Trump was. The interview with Stormy Daniels, the porn star, aired last night. That was, in fact, taped 2 weeks prior to the Kieran McDougal interview and appearance. In both cases, the two women said Donald Trump told them he reminded them of his daughter.
Yes.
This has nothing to do with the ultimate outcome of this, but what? Well, I got nothing other than it's just creepy. It's creepy.
Yeah, but I think what it does demonstrate is that there is a pattern of behavior here by the president, because both women had no idea what the other woman said in their interviews, because right. The Stormy interview took place before McDougal, but didn't air until after McDougal. So she could have had no idea what they said. And, you know, that's one striking similarity, but the fact that he brought them both to the Beverly Hills Hyatt, the fact that he told them both that they were special, the fact that they're, you know, just the way that he conducted himself in both of these situations, according to these women, seems strikingly similar. Their stories seem to demonstrate a pattern, but again, the president continues to say that none of this happened.
But here's the well, maybe they're colluding. Here's the thing that I don't understand how anybody could come to any conclusion other than the fact that he had affairs with both of these women. His attorney paid money to silence this woman, Stormy Daniels, prior to last night's interview, prior to the election, 11 days before the election, something like that?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Why would you pay hush money if nothing happened?
Well, and McDougal was paid by the National Enquirer, which is an ally of President Trump under the same circumstances. I mean, that's a great question, Steve. The argument that the Trump team would make is that this person, this short of timeline, you know, just even if she got her lies out into the ether, it would have been enough to damage him, and they just didn't want to take that risk. You know, it's similar to the argument that Bill O'Reilly has made about the settlements that he's paid out. This isn't an uncommon argument that men in powerful positions make when they're accused of women of wrongdoing or adulterous affairs. I think it's one of the most glaring questions that need to be raised when you look at the president's credibility. But I do have to say, and, you know, Anderson Cooper made this point last night to Stormy Daniels' attorney, she has lied. She's lying at some point in this story, right? So she said repeatedly over and over again that she didn't have an affair with him, even as late as January of 2018, and now she's saying she did have an affair with him. So,
oh yeah, but
absolutely a liar.
Absolutely.
So the question is the president
no
a liar
question.
Too? Yeah.
No question. But we also know the president lied 2,000 times, confirmed by the Washington Post and other sources in his first year. So he can't claim credibility on any level. Look, the bottom line is it comes down to this. Was there a campaign finance violation violating those laws? If, in fact, there was, the penalties are fairly minor, but this bullying thuggery and the threat that Stormy Daniels claims was made on her own person while she was holding her baby, those type of things. Is your president a thug? Nixon never addressed that. The American people know that I'm not a thug. We don't know. And that's why I wish we would raise the standard here. Let's get Mueller's decisions and his report finalized. Let's raise the standard and find out whether Mr. Trump ought to be in the White House or not. That's all I'm asking for.
But I mean, there is a question, Steve, as to whether or not this Stormy Daniels affair tracks back to Mueller's investigation through Michael Cohen, because Michael Cohen, we know, was involved in a real estate deal with the Russians during the 2016 campaign. We know he was in conversation with them. We know that he is one of, if not the president's most trusted and obviously loyal a confidant. So, you know, maybe not Stormy specifically, but Cohen has been interviewed by Robert Mueller. This is part of that investigation. So the salacious aspect of this certainly is what grabs the tabloid headlines. But there's a more substantive problem here that the president's dealing with. And Cohen is really the entry into that part of the conversation. And I think to a certain extent, that's why you've seen the president be so quiet about this, because he understands that there's a bigger problem here than just whether or not he was having an affair.
Right. So what's next legally? Because I think, Ryan, most Americans believe it happened but are completely desensitized to it. And who takes the fall now? Cohen, the lawyer? Who will take the blame for this?
Well, I mean, to Steve's point, the question is, where is the legal wrongdoing in this case? And in the Stormy Daniels case, in the Kara McDougal case, there's no accusation of wrongdoing. I mean, she said it was a consensual relationship. She said she was in love with him. She said she still feels that she likes him. The Stormy Daniels situation is whether or not there was a campaign finance violation, and there's been lawsuits filed to that respect. If that ends up happening, it's probably going to be a minor fine that Cohen himself will have to pay. It's not going to bring down the White House. You know, this is a lot more about the president repeatedly having to deal with questions related to this. It's a story that just will not go away. It hampers his ability to do his job because it's something that everyone is continuing to talk about. And I think at some point he's going to have to address it. You know, Donald Trump doesn't let, you know, minor slights by junior congressmen get away.
Right.
How is it that this has continued to go on and he has not even acknowledged it in any way, shape, or form?
Well, much like a volcano about to explode in the last 7 minutes, he tweeted, so much fake news. Never been more voluminous or more inaccurate, but through it all, our country is doing great.
And I think that, you know, Steve, that's what he's banking a lot of his support on, that he can just tell his most ardent supporters that are going to be with him through thick and thin, you don't need to believe this. This is fake news. Just look somewhere else, and that they're going to stick by him. And, you know, we probably won't know the answer to that until 2020.
Yeah, I think it's completely fair to demand a president who is not caught up in constant accusations and allegations and accept the fact, as most of America seems to do in the case of Robert Mueller, this is not picking on poor Donald Trump. There's smoke here, and where there's smoke, there may well be fire. Mueller, in a popularity survey, if you will, over the weekend, 57% of Republicans, I believe it was 75% of independents, and 80% of Democrats all say they're fully supportive of Mueller and what he's doing, and they want to know the answers. So that's over the majority of the country.
And that continues with members of Congress. You know, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell all want Mueller to finish his work. Richard Burr, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who's a chair, who is a Republican, he also agrees. You know, the only person that's calling this investigation a witch hunt is Donald Trump and his cronies on the House Intelligence Committee. Everybody wants to see this come to fruition. And if Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong, he should want to see it come to fruition as well.
Yeah, just get it done. What did Rick Santorum say, and why did he say it about the kids in this phenomenal March for Our Lives over the weekend? And is John Bolton a good idea or a bad idea? And where's the little Kim Jong-un in all of this?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
A lot of irony in that the far, far right gun advocates who really want to hammer home that it's my constitutional right to have as many guns as I want are arguing that the constitutional right to assemble and protest was a waste of time and a whole bunch of BS. Former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum yesterday on CNN.
Is this really all about politics, or is it all about keeping our schools safe? Because it is about keeping our schools safe. Then we have to have much broader discussion than the discussion that's going on right now. How about kids, instead of looking to someone else to solve their problem, do something about maybe taking CPR classes or trying to deal with situations that where there is a violent shooter that you can
actually respond to that? How are they looking at other people? I would ask you, they took action.
Yeah, they took action to ask someone to pass a law. Oh, someone else needs to pass a law to protect me.
I've got a kid that's going to be in high school next year. And I want him focused on algebra and other stuff. If his main way to survive high school is learning CPR so when his friend gets shot, he can keep that, to me, we've gone too far. I'm proud of these kids. I know you're proud of these kids, too, because you can do
both. I'm proud of them, but I think everyone should be responsible and deal with the problems that we have to confront in our lives. And ignoring those problems and saying they're not going to come to me and saying some phony gun law is going to solve it. Phony gun laws don't solve these problems. Well, that's what we found out.
It is one of the dumbest arguments I have ever heard anyone in any position of current or former power make. And here we are almost 24 hours later, and he said nothing.
I couldn't believe it.
He didn't want to apologize. That's fine. But he hasn't addressed it at all. Ryan Nobles, what's the reaction in Washington?
Well, I think that what Rick Santorum highlights here is an under-reported aspect of the gun debate in America. I do think there is a significant portion of Americans who believe that their right to own a firearm is worth the safety risk associated with it. And I do believe that they feel that, you know, it is almost the price of freedom in some respect. and that when they talk about responsible gun ownership, they're not just talking about you owning a gun, but also protecting yourself from a gun. And I don't think that gets talked about enough. I think that there are, I mean, I think that's part of the reason that these gun laws haven't changed, because there are Americans who feel as though this is just the way it's going to go because we have the Second Amendment. And I think that's kind of what Rick Santorum was alluding to there, that somehow learning CPR is going to protect your kid in a world full of guns. And I'm not necessarily sure if that's an argument that resonates, but I do think that there's a lot of Americans that feel the same way that he does.
But let me tell you something. If we've gotten to a point, and by the way, Rick Santorum has about 10 kids, and I may be wrong on the number, but I'm close. If we've gotten to a point where parents are supposed to accept and kids are supposed to accept, well, it's just the risk of going to school. The risk of going to school is maybe you're going to get an A, maybe you're not. Maybe you're going to get bullied, maybe you're not. Oh, yeah, by the way, maybe you'll get shot, maybe you won't.
Yeah.
And every doctor in the country, by the way, has come out and pointed out what an idiotic argument that learning CPR is when all the blood is on the ground. It's a shame to me that, you don't believe the kids are going to make a difference, that's fine. But to minimize what these kids did and what they're doing is absolutely ridiculous. And to me, it's fear.
Yeah.
It's fear. The reaction is fear by the entire segment of people who are trying to minimize these kids and the power that they have.
I'm just confused about what inspired Rick Santorum to get into politics, because that's the dumbest thing. First of all, I took a babysitting class when I think I was 10 or 11 years old, and they taught you CPR. That doesn't help anything. Yeah. But we're encouraging.
You already said that to the person. He goes, well, how dare they turn to others to solve their problems? That's the entire point of government.
But you know
the entire point of government is to solve people's problems.
You know what you guys remember, right? The first women's march, right after Trump's inauguration, the first women's march, Trump came out and tweeted the same thing. What are all these women, what are they all assembling for? What's the point?
And I'm sure that Rick Santorum doesn't feel the same way about the March for Life, which is the anti-abortion march that takes place every year in Washington, which he speaks at on a regular basis. I mean, his argument in that respect, that the idea, I mean, I don't, so should these young people that aren't even 18 yet run for office? I guess what? I think a lot of them probably are.
Probably would if they did.
Because the one thing that I noticed this weekend is that, you know, and talking to a lot of these kids, is that they didn't even care about politics, you know, 6 weeks ago.
Sure.
It was the last thing that they were thinking about. A lot of them wore Make America Great Again hats because it was ironic and funny. That's the extent of their political knowledge. And now all of a sudden they're learning about the way a bill, a bill becomes a law, going back to Schoolhouse Rock. The idea that they're asking someone else to do this for them is laughable. They're the ones that are organizing the town halls. I mean, think about it. This was a bunch of 16-year-old kids that organized a rally that Everytown, the anti-gun group that came out after Newtown, said 1.7 million people participated in around the world.
How about that?
I mean, and this was kids that did it.
Even if you disagree with the message, you ought to be proud of them. I got to jump to John Bolton.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time.
And the organization, too, that went into this and whatnot, there were speeches set up.
Yeah,
agendas that went out days
before. Set up to a family dinner. And then take on what these kids got together. John Bolton, don't we need to wait a few days to figure out if he is the Antichrist and the end of civilization? I'm not wild about the appointment either, but everybody lost their mind on Friday when he was named. And I think we got to see what he's really going to do, don't we?
I think we do. And the other thing, too, Steve, is that, I don't know, this rotating cast of characters can continue around the president of the United States. Ultimately, it's Donald Trump driving the ship.
Right.
You know, he's the one that's going to decide. If we decide, you know, there's a lot of talk about how John Bolton has been particularly aggressive with North Korea, and he's the one that said that we should even take military intervention in North Korea. We're not dropping any bombs on North Korea unless Donald Trump decides we're going to drop a bomb on North Korea. So, I don't know. I think that you could put, you know, Woody from Toy Story in the role of National Security Advisor. And I say that because I'm looking at it in my kid's bedroom right now. I think that at the end of the day, Donald Trump is the one that's in charge here. And if he decides he wants to meet with Kim Jong-un, he's going to meet with Kim Jong-un. It doesn't matter what John Bolton tells him. And if anything, John Bolton's in that position because Donald Trump feels that he thinks the same way he does about some of these big issues of the day. This guy, Donald Trump, is the president. He's the one making the calls. And, we're going to get worked up over every staff move because that's just the nature of Washington. At the end of the day, he's the one in charge.
If patterns hold, we'll have a distraction coming today to get off the Stormy Daniels story.
How about this for distraction?
Yeah.
Sister Jean. for national security advisor.
Mr. Gene, I'd sign up for that.
You're excited about Loyola, right?
It's going to be tremendous.
Crazy.
It's going to be tremendous. Yeah. I don't even know why we're going through the formality of the Final Four. Let's just move on. Sister Jean's busy. She's got a lot to do. Let's just crown him now. Ryan, thank you, buddy.
Exciting. All right, guys, have a great day.
Ryan Noble, CNN, and all over social media. By the way, this is show 1,111. So if you're playing to pick four, take the ones.
11-11.
The Steve Cochran Show continues with the news. Are we doing a break and then that? The news next, and then Dean on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me, kiss me good.
His name is Dean Richards. And he's, I assume he's back from New York. Are you back from New York?
I am back from New York.
Did you get caught in all the snow?
There was no snow when I arrived there.
What?
Apparently, I guess the airports were closed the day before I got there, and they said, you know, big nor'easter is coming in. And I got there, and it was 50 degrees and barely any snow along the curbs.
How convenient for you.
It was very, very pleasant.
You think they did it for you? You think they set it up that way?
I am starting to suspect that all this talk that we've heard about nor'easters in Boston and New York all big fat lies.
So you think it's a whole Hollywood set kind of thing?
Looks good
on news channels when it's snowing.
I think they make it up to keep people out.
Fake snow.
So we don't
see. Fake snow. I'm calling fake snow.
Yeah, it's fake snow.
Fake snow. The fine people in Crystal Lake who came out to the show Saturday night.
And which I enjoyed tremendously.
You weren't there. On Saturday night, they were great. The crowd was great. Mike Toomey and Tim Benker and John DeCoste were all great. It was John's first show on his new knee.
How's he doing?
No, he's good. He's amazing.
Did he stand?
I meant his comedy.
Yeah, no, he did.
He did stand up. Okay.
Yeah, he did. It was a pretty remarkable thing. 10 days down the road from a new knee.
That's great.
Wouldn't that be funny if he wasn't funny anymore? Like all the comedy that he had
was in his knee?
In his knee.
Like that's the real funny bone.
Yeah.
That they took out.
No, he was actually still funny. So we had a good time and everybody was very nice. So thank you for coming out to that as the Cochran Comedy Tour continues.
And what's
who
our
knows
next, what's our
where
next
we'll be
date
next?
For that?
Who knows where we'll be next? But I'm just so excited that you're going to be there New Year's Eve.
Yes, apparently I am.
Still waiting for a final commitment.
We're going over the papers with my lawyer right now.
I don't blame you.
We're right in the middle of writing a
book.
Don't
blame you a bit. So I'm listening to your show yesterday. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm just minding my own business. And I heard you talking about the Tyler Perry.
Yes.
And I know you talked to Tyler Perry. We'll hear some of that coming back. But when you do an interview with Tyler Perry, is that then Tyler Perry's interview and he can put his name on it?
It's Tyler Perry Talks to Dean Richards.
Oh,
is officially how we describe it. This is one of those interviews. You know what? I can't even say this because talking about, Stormy Daniels right now, who signed the non-disclosure agreement.
Uh-huh.
They had the critics sign non-disclosure agreements before we could see the movie. We had to sign a piece of paper saying that we wouldn't talk about this movie until a certain time.
Because it's terrible?
Well, that would be violating my non-disclosure agreement.
Not your first day.
How about this? Is that usually a good thing, Dean, or a bad thing?
Generally speaking.
I have to call Stormy Daniels and find out how to answer that question.
Okay. Would you rather be hit in the crotch with a wiffle bat or see this movie?
I have no comment on
No comment at this time?
All I know is they asked me to come to their hotel room. And
the next thing you know, you're watching a movie.
I was putting the groceries in my car, and somebody came up behind me and said, talk about this movie, and it'd be a shame if one of those little kids get hurt.
Right. You said, I don't even have kids.
I said, I don't even have kids. What are you talking about?
Right. Donald Glover's in the news. Star Jones is in the news. Paul McCartney. Dean's got some sound from the March for Our Lives. And former Senator Rick Santorum's an idiot, but not in this particular segment of the show.
What?
What?
Let's see. What's coming up at 8:30?
Steve, if you took more time to practice CPR instead of making wisecracky remarks like
imagine how much safer the show would be.
That's right.
That's what I'm thinking about.
Just not on us.
Well, you made the point, though. You learned CPR as a fifth grader.
Oh, my God. Right. Yeah.
I think most kids know CPR, and it has nothing to do with the story.
Nothing.
Sorry, Rick.
No.
You'll be calling his name.
Give the White House credit when it's deserved. 60 Russian diplomats being kicked out of the country after the UK poisoning incident. Andrea with more in a couple of minutes. All right, so the March for Our Lives this weekend, a lot of famous people were out there, including a Beatle, Dean.
Including a Beatle, Paul McCartney, did not go on stage, did not make a speech, did not perform as many of them did. He was actually in New York City. They had a big march there. And a CNN reporter caught up with him on the street, you know, walking as inconspicuously as you can when you are Paul McCartney. But this is what he said.
Just give us a sense of why it was important for you to come out here today.
Just to support the people.
Yeah. What do you hope can be accomplished? Do you think that can happen at the legislative level? We've seen it happen at the state level in places like Florida and here in New York.
You know, I'm like everyone. I don't know. But this is what we can do. And so I'm here to do it. One of my best friends was killed in gun violence right around here. So it's important to me.
Yeah, this was pretty poignant because he was literally blocks away from where John Lennon was murdered through gun violence on the streets of New York back in 1980. So I thought that was one of the more poignant moments, one of the more poignant, you know, comments of the event. I thought the teenagers, the young people that spoke were eloquent, and lots of A-list performers came out to support them, many with Chicago connections, including in this little montage that we've got, the first one, an Academy Award winner whose life was also touched by gun violence. Mashup that Lin-Manuel Miranda,
I love that song,
Ben Platt from Dear Evan Hansen did together. Ben singing a part of a song from Hamilton, Lin-Manuel singing part of a song from Dear Evan Hansen that's so moving and so poignant.
And a brilliant arrangement.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But also we heard Miley Cyrus, who sang her song.
Was Common in there too?
Common was doing the rap. Now I got a problem with this. I love Common.
Mm-hmm.
I can't watch him rap anymore without thinking of that SNL spoof they did a couple of weeks ago of him now. He's ruined for me now.
Oh, that's a shame because he's still such a good dude.
He's a great dude. He's a good, good guy. We heard...
and Jennifer Hudson, of course.
Jennifer Hudson let it off, who lost her mother and her little nephew and brother to gun violence. So some very poignant messages. Steven Spielberg was there and marched. He donated $500,000 to pay for the event.
Which is nice. Now, he found that in his car, but it doesn't mean he had to give it away.
That's the way some of us might small change in our sofa cushions.
Right.
George and Amal Clooney were there. They donated $500,000. Oprah was there. She donated $500,000 to help pay for the event. People are saying that, you know, it's the Hollywood elitists who are orchestrating this whole thing and manipulating these kids, but that's not true. The kids are deciding the platform. These A-listers who put up the money for it are just simply saying, we'll pay for it. You do your event and we'll pay for it.
These kids have more guts and more courage than every adult in Washington. It's, they ought to be saluted every time, regardless how you feel about the issue. They are exercising their constitutional rights while you protect yours.
What I found most interesting with this, a lot of the kids, not all of them, but a lot of the kids said that they were gun owners and that they respect the Second Amendment and support the Second Amendment and are not don't want people's guns taken away. They just want some logical solutions to kids.
They want to go to school and not get shot. How outlandish.
Yeah, but they're not as many people have said, and the NRA themselves said, trying to crush the Second Amendment. It's not what this is about at all.
Well, the other most amazing thing about that argument is this Congress can't agree that the sky is blue. You think they're going to agree on a constitutional amendment?
No.
I mean, give me a break. Yep. Star Jones in the news. First time in a long time I've seen Star and Jones in the same sentence.
She got married over the weekend.
Again?
She was.
It's been a few, right? How many is this? Five, six, seven?
No, I think this is number two for her.
Oh, just two. Was this sponsored too?
This one was not sponsored. Okay. This one was very low key. She got married on a cruise. Married a Chicago lawyer, and she is going to be spending quite a bit of time here in Chicago.
What does she do now? Is she still famous? I don't even know what she
does. She is a spokesperson for heart health, I know. I believe she just wrote a book. We just had her here at WGN-TV not too long ago.
Yeah, but you guys will book anybody.
People walking outside,
they'll book them.
We were doing a segment on eyelashes, I think, and invited her to come on.
Surprised you didn't have me.
But she said she's look forward to be around town a lot.
All right, let's get to this Tyler Perry story. You sat down with the Tyler Perry about the Tyler Perry movie, which you can't talk about because you and Stormy Daniels have both signed non-disclosure agreements.
I figured out a way to talk about this movie. Here's my official statement on this because I did sign a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't speak about this movie specifically. But when I was in New York, I did see several movies, is my first statement. Number two, of those several movies, one of them blew chunks. Number three, Steve, you know what a fan I am of the digestive system.
Yes.
And when I say something blue chunks,
yes,
I mean that in the most
graphic, horrific way.
Digestively healthy way possible.
Yes, I understand.
So that's really...
And you're not saying that about any specific
that about
movie.
That. No, I'm just saying that one of them...
Was terrible.
Of the many that I saw.
Yeah, one of them.
One of them...
And you saw this weekend over two movies.
That's correct.
Yes.
That's correct.
Yes. Tyler Perry's a nice guy, though, isn't he?
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
Very, very nice guy. We talked about the movie, Tyler Perry's Acrimony with Taraji P. Henson. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a betrayal drama, high drama. We talked about, all the talk now is the empowerment of the movie Black Panther, putting people of color in different positions in movies like we've never seen before. And I argued to him that I thought his movies had also been doing that for quite a very long time now. We had a very interesting conversation about that. But also, the big story was last week he was at an art auction where he was there and a lot of super big powerful people were there, including Jay-Z and Beyonce.
This is where he got in the auction thing with the kid?
Yeah. He got into an auction war.
A bit off.
With six-year-old Blue Ivy. Little Blue Ivy grabs her parents' bidding paddle and starts waving it around like crazy, bidding on stuff like crazy. And she actually got into a bidding war with Tyler Perry about a piece of art that Tyler, I guess, wanted. And this is what he had to say about that.
I just have to ask you also about your auction battle with Little Blue Ivy week. What was that like?
Just good old charity fun. She, took the paddle out of Beyonce or Jay's hand, and she was bidding on every piece of art that came out. She said, "Oh, I want that!" So it was a lot of fun.
You
worth
said,
the cost.
I'm going to shut down that little girl.
I'm not letting you have everything. That's right.
You got to love a grown man, Steve, who is not afraid to.
To take on a six-year-old girl.
Take on a little six-year-old and crush her dreams for life, sending her to therapy.
Well, when you're right, you're right. I mean, you can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Thank you, buddy.
See you tomorrow.
That's Dean.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
.841, still a few games to go in this season. It's been disappointing, to say the least. But how about some good Hawks news? How about some potentially very good Hawks news. 2014 seems like a long time ago, but Dylan Sakura, is it Sakura or Sakura?
I think we need to ask him. I thought it was Sakura.
Sakura, okay.
Yes.
We'll get that right. Is it Dylan or Dylan? I never know.
That's again, I'm not sure.
He's going to join us here in just a second. But 2014, he's drafted in the sixth round. Now, six-round picks, that's not a guarantee you're going to get there. You know, that's a take-a-looky pick. That's a looky pick. That's we like you, but you got a ways to go. And he goes to Northeastern. He tears it up. Had a great senior year at Northeastern. And you know what one of his specialties are? Tell me if we need a little help here. Power play goals.
I'm trying to think of a team locally that could use some help.
We could use a little help on the power play. And Dylan joins us now. Good morning and welcome to the Blackhawks.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Well, congratulations. We're thrilled that you're going to be a part of this.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And maybe playing as soon as Thursday night?
Yeah, you know, I'm here, I'm ready, and hopefully get into lineup, but that's up to the coaching staff this week.
You nervous yet?
A little bit. I don't think it's all really soaked in yet. You know, take a little time to get acclimated here, but hopefully get my feet wet in the first couple of days.
Going to be weird to get a paycheck to play hockey, isn't it?
Exactly. Right? I'm not the broke college student anymore, hopefully, so it'll be a little different.
We know you had a great team at Northeastern and Beanpot winners. Do you know that, Dave? These are the Beanpot boys.
I know that, yeah.
And rough loss to Michigan in a tight one as the NCAAs opened up. But if I'm right, didn't you score a power play goal in that one, too?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Okay, we're going to need a lot of those. We're going to need a lot of power play goals. I'm sure Stan Bowman has explained that to you. Dave, say hi to our new friend.
Hey, Dylan, welcome to Chicago. First of all, it's kind of a whirlwind for you this weekend, wasn't it? I mean, you have the loss to Michigan. Kind of describe what the last 48 hours or so have been like for you.
Yeah, you know, the last couple of days have been pretty emotional. You know, it's tough to wrap up 4 years at the college level, but you know, as things got moving here, it's exciting to get to Chicago now and finally meet all the guys.
Isn't it something though when you have to go, well, this has been a lot of fun and obviously I want to play in the bigs, but I don't want to be a grown-up yet. I kind of like this whole college life thing. Or are you ready?
You know, I think I'm ready. You know, that's why I was there for 4 years. I think college kind of teaches you those experiences, and you know, I was happy enough to have some good experience there, and you know, share some time at Northeastern, and just happy to be here. And obviously, you got to say thanks to Rocky, John, Stan, and the organization for having me here, and I'm excited to get going.
You know, because of how you played at Northeastern, you went from a guy who was a six rounder that people would keep an eye on, but you know, a six rounder, to be in everybody's focus of attention. So, what was it about your college experience that had your game mature so quickly?
You know, that's what I think the college level is all about. It's all about development, and you know, obviously coming in had a rough first year, and I was a smaller guy, and kind of just took me a little bit to adjust into my body and into the game, into the pace. And, you know, to take 4 years to develop there has been awesome, and I can't thank the coaching staff there and the players I got to play with enough.
You mentioned the Blackhawks hierarchy. The Hawks played in Boston a few weeks ago. I understand that Joel Quenneville came to see you play. Did you guys have a chance to interact at all, or were you aware he was watching you? Did you know?
I found out actually after the game, but no, I wasn't able to see him.
Yeah. Was that a little, probably just as well you didn't know? Would you have been nervous at all with him watching?
Yeah, I guess a little bit. You know, over the years, you kind of get used to having them in the stands. So, yeah.
Would you, you know, we considered it a gimme that you were going to get here with the Hawks having your rights and stuff, but did you go through a period where you were considering, say, a terrible solution, like going to the Boston Bruins or other bad ideas you may have had at one point?
No. I mean, throughout the year, I always kind of just said it that, you know, my intentions were just to focus on Chicago. But, you know, it's tough. It's a tough situation being at school and, you know, having this opportunity. And you kind of try to stay grounded and not to think about it too much because you can't let it get to your head. So, you know, I kind of just put off all the Chicago stuff in the background until my season was over.
When the
it's hard not to like him, isn't it? Listen to Dylan.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
He wanted to wear the Indian head sweater.
Of course. Well, when the Blackhawks signed your brother, Tyler, should we have seen that as a sign that you were going to be here before too long?
I guess you could say that. You know, it's pretty cool to have him in the same organization, and you know, hopefully maybe be teammates one day.
Is Tyler bigger, smaller? What's his game?
Yeah, he's bigger. He's more of a defensive guy, but you know, responsible two-way player.
Who's a better player?
I'll leave that one up to him.
Well, if we weren't on the air, who's a better player?
different.
So it's exactly right.
He's the Tyler's the big brother, you know. So
yeah.
Got to be careful.
He can still rub his stinky hockey socks in his face. Exactly. Who got you guys playing?
You know, it was my dad. You know, he wasn't too much of a player in his time. He's actually a wrestler, but you know, being from Canada, it's kind of just the nature of growing up there and getting into hockey. And you know, it was awesome having my brother kind of show me the ropes. He's 3 years older than me, so he kind of went through everything right before I did. So, you know, my parents were able to see how it was like and kind of paved the road for me.
You heard from anybody on the team yet? Any of the guys that are here?
Yeah, I know a couple guys, yeah. So I got DeBrincat picked me up this morning from the hotel, and that's why I was
waiting. Hold on a second. DeBrincat's got a driver's license? Come on. Yeah, what a year he's had, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome to see him.
Why are you so good on the power play? What do you see that other people don't see?
You know, I think at school, you know, a lot of help from my coach, Jared Kieser, and we had one of the best power plays in the nation, and, you know, we're just fortunate enough to be together for a couple of years. So I think, you know, at that stage, we had some good chemistry, and we were able to make some plays.
You know, for kids, this is a huge hockey town for kids, as you can imagine. But for kids that are listening, or coaches of kids that are listening, what's the key? You got to be in the right place at the right time. You got to play as a unit. You got to not be afraid to shoot. What do you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything, like you said. You know, not being afraid to shoot, but you know, just looking back at our unit there at Northeastern, I think there's just a lot of instinct and just knowing where each other are and trusting each other. And you know, I think that's a big reason why we were successful.
And the correct pronunciation of your last name, Dylan?
Sakura.
There you go. It's going to get mispronounced a lot. I just want to make sure we weren't among those people.
I'm used to it.
You're also going to get a nickname from the Blackhawks, but I'm sure you have one already, right?
What is your hockey nickname?
I go usually Sicky.
Sicky.
I like that.
That's what I've been getting, yeah.
I'm not sure your parents would be wild about that, but that's our little Sicky. you spent any time in Chicago?
Just over the last couple of years, just being at prospect camps, but you know, just a week. But yeah, excited to have a little free time and kind of explore for myself.
I'm trying to think of where you're going to pay for the first dinner with your first professional check. What's your favorite meal?
I'm a steak guy. Steak, mashed potatoes.
Oh, we don't have any steakhouses.
Yeah,
too bad.
I'll give you a little inside hockey information here. Sneaky good steak, Joe's, Crab House.
I got it.
Joe Stone Crab.
I almost forgot where the world has recommended. Joe Stone Crab. Famous for seafood, but a great steak.
Awesome. All right. I'll check it out.
All right. If you have any problems, call Dave Ennett, and I'll give you his number.
You.
Last word, Dave.
Well, I first of all, just welcome. I saw you tweeted something about Loyola. So, of course, everybody's on the Loyola bandwagon here. How's your bracket looking, Dylan?
Actually, at school, you know, our coaches were kind of stick with that stuff, so we weren't able to do brackets. But
yeah, that's good.
I've just been watching them, and it's cool to see an underdog. We kind of always go with the underdog.
So. Sorry that Mr. Ennett tried to drag you into gambling.
No, I just wanted a chance to
Dylan's
explain.
Just trying to
squeaky clean.
Dylan's just trying to do the right thing.
Yep.
Dylan, Brent Davidson's a fan. Brent Davidson is a big Blackhawks fan, and the MB Financial Bank question of the day is this, and Brent's going to get a autographed hockey puck from the Hawks. What's your favorite album, playlist, or artist that you listen to before a game?
Favorite album, playlist? That's a tough one. You know, I kind of switch it up. You know, I think being a 22-year-old, you kind of get in the mainstream rap music, so maybe the Migos and stuff like that, but I'm pretty open with my music. I like all different kinds, and just whatever I'm kind of feeling on game days is what I go with.
What's the oldest artist you would listen to? Like, you listen to anybody like oldest? Super old? You know, like in their 30s?
No, I don't want to admit it on live here, but I'm Alanis Morissette fan.
Oh, my God. Alanis Morissette. Nice. She's nearly dead.
She's Canadian and all, so.
Hey, listen, man. It's great to have you here. I hear nothing but good things, and I really look forward to seeing you playing for our Chicago Blackhawks.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate you being on. Nice kid, huh?
Very nice.
Yeah. Well, look at you trying to drag him into a gambling problem.
I figure he might have just for fun.
Hey, Dylan, you got any insight on the brackets? Because I got some cash I want to spend here at the end. I think that's what you were saying, Dave, I'm pretty sure.
In a roundabout way.
CMB Financial Bank. Breakfast with the Blackhawk. Joe, Super Joe, you're one of the big sports guys in town. A lot of people don't know it yet, but you are.
Yeah.
What do you think of Dylan? Wasn't he good?
Yeah, I mean, especially being such a young guy.
22.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the driver who picked him up this morning's 20.
I still can't believe we let DeBrinket get a license.
Kids driving.
Yeah. And can you believe his favorite old artist, Alanis Morissette?
Wow. That's vintage.
What do you think is his favorite track on that?
You ought to know.
Yeah.
Ironic.
Yeah, ironic. Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
don't
probably.
You think?
Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
It is 8:58. The Steve Cochran Show continues. And next hour on the program, we got a lot to do left in the show. Let me just say that, including going over the sad state of affairs that our basketball brackets are in.
Are?
We can't do that. I can get into trouble. So
what are you talking about?
Well, just like Dylan Secura couldn't do brackets.
Apparently not, based on your score. Doesn't look like you entered.
Like everybody else's is so good.
Let me just tell you something. I don't want to give out the number right now, but I am blowing you away.
Congratulations.
One more correct than you have.
Great. If you're blowing him away, what am I doing?
We'll get back to you on that. but it looks good for you. Let me just say
okay,
that.
Okay, good.
CLTV joins us next as well on 720 WGN. It's 9/11. Swedish Chef, happy birthday. We are live on CLTV and here on 720 WGN. Couple of special guests in studio. You recognize these two?
I do, and I'm so excited they're here because they're fun. Not that you guys aren't fun.
Yeah,
but
really.
This is just an extra treat.
We don't know where Comcast NBC SportsCenter Patrick Boyle is today, but we know where Catherine and Patrick are, and they're here in studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing... I could be doing better, but yeah.
You're feeling so-so.
Yeah.
Are you thrilled that you're here to see me?
Patrick, we feel that way too some days.
Really?
Listen, buddy, I understand. You don't feel good. You'd rather still be in bed, right?
No, I'd rather be watching TV.
Yeah, you know, I'm the same way.
Patrick, Dave, and I say that too sometimes.
No, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
Well, you're on TV right now. If you wave at this camera right here, you're on CLTV. Give it a wave. Okay.
Hello.
And, Catherine, your birthday's this week?
Yes.
All right, so this will be your happy birthday show today.
Thank you.
What can we do for you? How can we make your birthday more special?
I'm not sure.
You know what? All I've got is money. Hold on a second.
Oh, there you go. Right.
No.
She's so nice.
Never
like be like, yeah, yeah.
Never like a gift. Never like a gift wallet in the mouth.
There you go.
You know, Patrick, it's a shame you said you wanted to watch TV. You might get this as well. Please pass that over to Catherine. Happy birthday, Catherine.
Thank
That's
you
20
very
American
much.
Dollars that
Thank
I just
you.
Printed this morning in the basement.
Yeah, we don't even get that for our birthdays.
No, do not.
Well, you can't give her the Hooters gift card.
No, that would be wrong.
Yeah, it
would be on all sorts
wrong.
Of levels. Mm-hmm. Sandberg, you know, these guys got up early for us, and I feel sort of bad about it. What else can we do for them?
Well, and we should feel extra bad because it's their first day of spring break. So it technically should have been their first day of sleeping in.
Every dream come true. You get to hang out on a talk show.
On your first day.
Fantastic.
It's funny that you say about dreams coming true because my parents gave Patrick a Dave and Buster's experience for his birthday. And when he opened it, he said, all my dreams are coming true.
Please,
that's sweet.
First Dave and Buster's and now your old pal Steve Cochran. Huh? You're living all right, Patrick.
Yeah.
That was cool when you guys had the video game truck that pulled up. Did you love that?
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
So much.
It was a surprise, though, right?
No idea.
Were you?
But I don't like surprises.
But you were completely surprised, though, right, when you saw the truck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like...
I don't understand. Your head exploded. I don't understand the video game truck. So you and all your buddies get in the truck and play?
Well, basically, you have video games at your house.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just like a truck with a bunch of TV.
But you're not hanging out with your pals. Everybody's doing their own thing.
Well, yeah. But there's like a bunch of TV.
Yeah, Steve, pay attention.
You can like play with your friends too. Like there's.
But this isn't a teen girl thing, right? Like you and your friends wouldn't do this.
Well, you would say it's not a teen girl thing, but ask where we found Catherine during the party.
Would you jump on one of these stations?
I did. Yes.
Yeah. She tried to play Minecraft.
No. Oh. I was playing that one game where you like kept shooting me.
Oh,
we have to find me in the
any game where a little brother can shoot a big sister in a video game.
And I had no idea how to play. And he would not go easy on me.
I had no idea. And like a bunch of times I'd be right behind her.
Oh, like sweet. Up on her,
so you snuck up on her and your video got her.
And she'd say, "Don't shoot me." And I'd be like, "Well, that's the point of the game."
That's so funny.
Why else are we here?
Exactly.
That's so cute.
So you guys are going out of town?
Yes.
And what do you do when you go out of town? You go to the beach?
The beach, the pool.
They play mini golf. They go go-karts.
They drive in a golf cart, too, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. It's like you're allowed to drive around in a golf cart, except like on the highway, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of golf where you're going.
And Catherine is, you know, she's going to be 14 on Friday, and so she's technically not old enough to drive. But like this year, she got taller than me this summer, so mm-hmm. I was letting her drive in the golf cart when we were playing golf, because if you're taller than me, it seems like you should be allowed to drive.
I thought maybe you were sipping the mommy juice and decided it was time for her to get behind the wheel.
No.
It did work out nicely having her in charge there.
What do you know what you have planned for your birthday yet, or is that going to be a surprise too?
I'm not really sure.
Okay.
Usually find like a cool restaurant. I don't know.
She's had a slow kickoff.
Yes.
On Friday, we did a family birthday dinner with my parents at Elwood's. And then she came home to her room was decorated. And she had gifts.
Super cool.
And she tried on bikinis, which is what every 14-year-old... Cool.
And that's when your father had a heart attack.
Yeah, that's what she was screaming. Actually, yes. he was in the bathroom, and she's like, "Dad, do you want to see it on me?" And
he's like, "No."
No.
And then last night, she and Patrick, what did you guys do?
We went to an escape house, and then we escaped. So that was exciting.
You know what?
So cool. We did that. Okay, now here's the intelligence.
You're talking about the escape
level.
House?
Yeah. Our news department did this. It's kind of like a team building thing. We divided ourselves into three teams. I don't think anybody got out, and Catherine and Patrick are like, "Oh, yeah, we got out. No problem."
Secret room stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys climbing in the fireplace.
You guys aren't locked in there.
Well, they eventually let us out.
No, I mean the newsroom. I meant the newsroom.
I know. They felt sorry for us, I think, and let us out.
We were really bad. Oh,
you know,
man.
You guys probably don't know this, and your dad probably hasn't told you, but when your dad and Dave and I were kids, we didn't have birthdays. That's like a new thing. That was invented in the 80s.
It was a trend.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't even know how old we were. Just every year would go by, and you felt a little older.
Are you kidding? Our parents didn't know how old we were.
I'm sure you had cake.
No.
No. Cake hadn't been invented.
Cake was invented in what, Mary? Was it 82? 83?
Oh, yeah.
What? You guys didn't even get a birthday cake?
Nope.
Aw, I feel bad.
You probably got the game chess, because that was around a long time ago.
But it was a game checkers. We played checkers. Have you ever played checkers?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was checkers. We had checkers. You know, we had checkers and a rock.
Rock.
And then you could take the rock, and you could throw it at your friend, and then you could take it and throw it back.
Oh, I had Twister. No, Twister
was. Oh, well, guess who the rich kid was on the show?
Yeah.
Oh, look who had Twister. Mm.
Well, when you have like 10 siblings,
that's true.
You're ready for a game.
That's how her parents kept the kids busy. Let them all get into one pile.
We all ended up killing each other, too, on that Twister.
So I want to know, did you, Patrick, ask for something for your birthday, and did you get it? And Catherine, what are you asking for your birthday?
I asked for a trampoline, where I'm not getting it yet.
Not yet.
Because it's not warm enough.
Right.
And... Yeah.
Well, is it the trampoline with the walls around the side?
Yeah.
So you and your knucklehead friends don't go flying off onto the pavement?
It's a basketball hoop, too.
And you had a what?
The basketball hoop, too. It's like a basketball
hoop.
Okay, cool. For the trampoline, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Very nice. Catherine, what do you want for your birthday?
Well, I asked for AirPods. And my grandparents gave me them.
Nice.
Really
That's
awesome.
Cool, yes.
And she's got long hair that cover her ears, so they've been in her ears the whole time, and you don't, not right this second, but at home, and you don't know that
they're
she's
fused to your head.
She can't hear you, but you can't see them because of her hair. So
That's smart. For like during classes. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very nice of your grandparents, because I don't know if you know this, they're $12,000 a set. They're very, very expensive.
Yeah. She also asked for Barbie dolls.
No, Barbie dolls.
Not correct.
That's not correct. You guys are so funny.
I think tomorrow, one of the things they didn't ask for, but their Pat's mom gave them.
We're going to see Justin Timberlake.
Cool.
So we're very.
What?
You know what's exciting?
Oh, neat.
You know, Patrick. You know what's exciting about that, Patrick? I'm going to open for him. I'm on stage dancing right before he comes out.
I don't think he is.
No.
That's you know who could be, though, someday? Catherine. Can we brag on you?
Yeah.
Come on. You are an awesome singer. We've seen you sing Sheryl Crow.
Yeah, she can sing right now.
She's
come,
so you know, good. Maybe not before that you're 10, not a good opener.
Maybe before 10, she'll sing an entire song. I'm kidding, Catherine. I won't make you do that.
Right now.
What about me?
Oh, yeah, good to see you, Mr. I Don't Care. I want to go be on TV.
You could be the dancer. Patrick's got moves.
I think you owe him some money, too.
Right. Do I?
His birthday. Well, yeah. If you're really passing out birthday
I can
gifts.
See your purse. All right. We got to take a break. Hang around, you guys.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear you. Birthday to you.
You know, a cat is a School of Rock kid.
I know.
And that was Jack Black, you know, who starred in School of Rock. See how we all tie it together?
I love it.
924. If you're looking to pick up a couple of things, Russell Crowe's having a divorce sale. Russell Crowe getting divorced after a lot of years, actually. And he's selling off everything that he doesn't need, including memorabilia from Gladiator, Cinderella Man, L.A. Confidential, and Master and Commander, a highly personal collection worth $3 million.
Dave, let's chip in. We can get Steve for Christmas the body armor from Gladiator.
That's a good call.
Yeah, I think that
that'd be a hot look for me.
It would look great on you.
Awesome.
Or you would look great in it.
Yeah.
200 items up for sale. It's April 7th. Now, it's going to be in Australia, so you got to fly to get there.
Oh,
I can't go April 7th.
It's a long trip.
What are you doing April 7th?
I have plans.
Well, it's not like he's going to have another sale. You got to get there if you want this stuff.
Can you go? I can't go.
I'll go. Hey, for this show, I will go.
It'll
to
be
get the body armor.
Sotheby's in Australia. $2.8 million worth of stuff.
But they have locations here. It's a chain, isn't it?
Sotheby's? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like McDonald's.
Yeah.
Be like a Facebook Live with the paddles.
Yeah.
All right, so here's a couple of the things you could pick up if you go. It's worth $20,000 to $30,000. It's a stunt piece of body armor worn by Russell Crowe in Gladiator. $20,000 to $30,000.
We could do that. We'll just all chip in.
How about the aluminum prop sword from Gladiator? It's aluminum. It's a prop sword. $3,000.
Three? Oh, that's better.
Couldn't you just make one out of, like, Reynolds wrap?
Yeah, why do you want it anyway?
And a piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. A blue satin robe worn in Cinderella Man as a boxer.
Get that one. Yeah? Katie wants that one.
It's kind of sweaty, probably.
You know, what do you think? $2,000?
Dude, totally. With the bulldog?
Yeah,
do it.
Exactly.
With the bulldog, yeah.
Well, that's it. Can you see it?
Yeah.
That's the logo.
That's why I'm in.
He stole Biscuit's look.
Yeah. Yeah, $2,000. A violin used by Russell Crowe in Master and Commander. You're not going to believe how much this is.
A violin.
$110,000.
Do you want a violin?
Nothing.
Okay. It says no.
That's not too much money. See, yeah.
Do you think $110,000, you think could you afford that? I mean, do you have that kind of dough?
Yeah, you just got to sell your house, and then you got to sell your beach house, and then you got to sell your guest house, and you got
your car.
You got to sell your friend's house, you got to sell your cousin's house.
You got to start telling me some behind the scenes stuff. Apparently,
things are good. House?
Apparently, Sandberg and your dad are loaded.
Mary has a beach house. I want that next
no
weekend.
No idea. Did you know that Sandberg had that kind of dough?
The guest house?
Guest house, a beach house, house, a regular
and
house.
And they're selling their friends' homes.
Yeah.
Who knows?
All right.
How about a Templar tunic and chain worn by Russell Crowe and Robin Hood? I can get you this, Dave, for $25,000.
Seems reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not making that kind of offer to just anybody.
Dave in a tunic.
You can see the full catalog at the Sotheby's website, Sothebys. Again, it's April 7th in Australia. Dave can't make it. He's busy.
Apparently, you need to offer those to the Boyles, not to me. They have the dough.
Based on what Patrick described, can't you see Pat Boyle wearing the body armor around the house, acting like he's the king?
Totally.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
I would,
it's unbelievable.
All we need is like a crown and a big throne.
Yeah.
Does your dad have a throne?
He does.
Yeah. He sits around on the throne quite a bit, does he?
Yeah.
Yep.
Where's the throne?
If you guys can't find him, do you just figure he's on
room.
The throne?
Yeah.
The living room?
Yeah. Yes.
They're going to say the bathroom.
Does your dad make you guys wait on him hand and foot?
No.
No, that's weird. That's weird.
Yeah.
Patrick, you feel like we've had a good talk so far this morning?
Yeah.
He wants to go watch TV, Steve.
Yeah.
You want to tell people what I gave you for your birthday?
You gave me $1.
It's 9:28. We're back with more.
You're Catherine. You want this?
Oh, it is so fake sweet. Catherine.
You guys, what am I going to do with it? I can't, like, buy anything.
You know what? He's not lying. You can't get anything for a dollar. Hey, you know what? I feel badly about that. Let me see if I got another one here for you. Yeah, there's another one. Now you have two.
Now you could buy like a pack of gum or some candy. Yeah.
Or, Dave, when you and I were kids, a new car.
I gave up candy for Lent.
Okay. Well, you can work that out off the air. It's 9:28. Headlines coming up on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Larry Brubbin's here. Larry was in here last year with a fascinating book. By the way, I think I introduced Larry last year the same way. He's the only one currently in the studio that graduated from MIT.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me check, Larry. It looks... yep, nope, you're the only one. Right. You're still the only one from MIT. How are you?
I'm great. I'm doing well. Thank you.
It's nice to see you again. And the book you were selling last year was what?
The book last year was Chicago Monumental, which was a... photography-based book in which I photographed all the historic monuments in the city.
Which is fabulous. I've had so many people comment positively on it, and I hope they went out and bought their own.
Sales are doing well.
Good.
Sales are doing well, and every time someone buys a book, of course, they're also donating to the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind and Access Living.
This is
all the proceeds. Or my proceeds go to those two great organizations.
Now, you supply 3D glasses with these books because there's a couple of bit of 3D photography. Let me tell you how popular your latest book on Chicago cemeteries. And I believe we have the most interesting cemeteries in the country here in Chicago.
Definitely.
Yes. And you handed out 3D glasses. Unfortunately, we can't use them on the book because we think someone stole it. We can't find it. But I'm going to hand out the glasses anyway. So, Kath, there you go. That's for you, Kat. And Patrick, there you go. I think you guys are going to look great in those. We'll get photos of you, even though you won't be able to see anything in 3D. But the 3D glasses in the book will show us what?
Well, the back of this book and the prior book, I spent a lot of time working on creating images that would be in 3D. I think it's a unique aspect of both books, but you need the glasses to see the 3D images. So
you also need the book.
You also need the book.
You also need the book. The book's an important piece of this story. Where do we get the book, by the way?
The book is available on Amazon. That's probably an easy place to get it, but it's also available in almost every bookstore. And if it's not in stock, they can order it.
It's called Chicago Eternal, Eternal. Didn't you just do a cemetery tour?
I did, yeah. Last year I did the Graceland Cemetery Tour. I would highly encourage everybody, whether you live in Chicago or don't live in Chicago, to take this tour. It is phenomenal. I've never seen monuments and I guess mausoleums to this extent.
Why are our dead people so much more interesting?
Yeah. I think it really is the history aspect, because you can walk through a cemetery and what you're really gaining, especially on a tour like at Graceland, is an incredible historic view in this case of Chicago.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's not only an historic view of Chicago by looking at some of the graves and mausoleums, especially on a tour where they're explained to you, but we also have figures, you know, people that lived in Chicago that are buried in cemeteries like Emmett Till and Bobby Franks.
Right.
These are kind of, unfortunately, you know, nationally known people. The Chicago cemeteries are quite unique.
I mean, I grew up in upstate New York in dairy farm country, and the same story in rural areas around the country. It wasn't that long ago, by historical standards, that there were almost family plots as opposed to these communal cemeteries in, you know, in rural areas and smaller areas.
Right.
So when you got to a town cemetery, it would spread out quite a bit, but also because it was a small group of people. In the case of the town I grew up in, 2,000 people, and much less than that back in the day. You can literally go into the cemetery where my father and mother are both buried, and you can see headstones going back to the middle of the 18th century, 1750, 1760, before this country was this country. And it's fascinating when you think you're standing on the ground where these individuals were buried and the life that they lived, whether they're famous people or not.
That's exactly the feeling I think one should get, and one, you know, does get in cemeteries. And if you view it correctly, now Chicago, in the case of Chicago, you know, the first settlers were in the around 1830, 1840, and some of those people are buried in the cemetery. So John Kinsey, who was the first considered settler who had a home, built a home not far from our studio here, is at Graceland Cemetery, and you can still read his headstone.
These ornate graves, Laredo Taft, that's the one with the man who has the cloak over him, I believe, where you can just see his eyes peeking out.
Right.
Did the people commission them before they died? Did they say, I want this ornate, or is this just family saying, we want the biggest and the best for whoever passed away?
No, that's a really good question. In some cases, many of these were commissioned before. I think the culture back, let's say, in the early 1900s and mid-1800s was to commission mausoleums and monuments. But in some cases, the families did it. Now, for example, at Oakwood Cemetery, Harold Washington, you know, has a mausoleum there, and Roland Burris, who is still alive. So he basically
built. Roland Burris' mausoleum became a big news story.
Right.
Because it was so ornate and so elaborate, it looked like Disneyland for dead. And thankfully, Mr. Burris is still with us, but he's got quite a resting place when that day comes.
Quite a resting place with many of famous quotes he made of engraved in the mausoleum, which you can read in my book and still see.
And for several people to come and sit and, you know, so like you, me, Dave,
reflect on the interviews
trip.
Roland didn't give us.
With the benches.
In Chicago Eternal. All right, so again, the book available on Amazon and everywhere else where books are sold, and much like Chicago Monumental, I mean, I would highly recommend it.
Thank you.
All right, so what is the number one cemetery tourist attraction in Chicago?
Oh, wow. That's, you know, there is a number one attraction but Rose Hill Cemetery, for example, which is also an amazing cemetery if you're interested in the history of Chicago. And there is probably the most photographed monument, which is of a mother and her daughter called Francis, the Francis Pierce Monument. That is supposedly one of the most highly photographed. It's just a gorgeous monument.
Right.
So, yeah, probably so.
Dave, any famous sports figures you can think of that would be buried in Chicago?
Ernie Banks. Sorry.
Well, yeah, of more recent vintage, I guess. Yeah, that was just a couple. And Ron Santo's buried here too, right?
I'm not sure about Ron Santo.
Yeah, but I know Ernie is. Yeah.
Ernie has a permanent monument now at Graceland, and Gabby Hartnett, for example, is out at in the suburbs at All Saints Cemetery, a Hall of Famer. So, yeah, there. If one does the research, you can find a lot of Chicago-based sports, you know, people in the cemeteries.
Is there a monument just based on old Bears quarterbacks, whether they're dead or alive? Because, you know, we've sort of been dead at that position for a long time until recently.
Yeah, rotating monument.
For people that want to not just see your book, but go out and see these places, you know, are tourists welcome in most cemeteries? Obviously, you need to be respectful of where you are.
You need to be respectful, and there are certain rules, you know, basically one should follow. Not everyone does. But, yes, you know, cemeteries have roads through them. You can drive your car. You can walk. There are tours, especially at Graceland and Rose Hill Cemetery. So, yeah, people are welcome. There are security people that, you know, are around. But it is a place that, you know, joggers. I've seen a lot of joggers in cemeteries. I've seen, you know, people just going out for a walk.
I've seen people walking pets, too. And cleaning up, of course, but just people strolling through these cemeteries as though it's just a, you know, a
jogging through golf course, or through a cemetery, rather. You can't jog on golf courses. I'm surprised you can jog in a cemetery.
It's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
Yes, it's an interesting choice.
It's I think, partially because the road network, you know, through a cemetery is pretty extensive. So you can, again, drive a car or you can choose to walk, but you have a network of paths and roads that are pretty extensive within any given cemetery.
It's peaceful. I don't think anyone's going to bother you.
Yeah, I suppose.
You know.
Did anyone bother you when you were taking the photographs?
I had a lot. No, not really. I had a lot of, I spent, you know, the last 4 years doing this at over 30, probably close to 40 cemeteries. I often met people that were curious about what I was doing. So, no, not really. I avoided being there at night.
Whose grave stands out? I mean, because you have some of the most beautiful pictures of some of the most ornate graves. Who stood out as having the least ornate grave? Someone who had maybe a big name, but had just maybe a marker with their name on it.
That is a really good question. You know what name comes to mind? Jane Byrne. Jane Byrne's at Calvary Cemetery. All she has is a gravestone that's embedded flat with the earth. And if you compare Jane Byrne to some of the other mayors in Chicago, let's take Richard Daley as an incredibly, I'm not downing it at all, but a very ornate monument. Mm-hmm. Then you go to Jane Byrne, and it's just totally flattened on the ground.
And is there I'll let you go on this, but is there a cemetery where it is the must-die cemetery where Chicago's richest and fanciest folks went to die, or does it more break down by geography? I'm from the neighborhood, so I'm going to be buried near here.
No, it's a good question again. I think Graceland is the cemetery where people of real note in Chicago are buried and chose to, you know, locate their plots. So, Graceland is definitely the cemetery for the wealthy of Chicago.
Eric's a funeral director. Eric, should I get this book for you?
It would be very interesting. I'm actually at Holy Sepulchre Cemetery on the south side, which is roughly 111th in Austin. A lot of family mausoleums, there are different sections that are, some are older than others, but you were talking about relatively famous people who have modest graves. The one that comes to mind is Chicago's ex-fire commissioner Quinn. He has a lawn-level marker, and that's about it. And you know, some people have family mausoleums, but they're so expensive nowadays, and unfortunately, I think people don't visit graves of their deceased loved ones like they used to or really should.
Well, it's an interesting note that there's a trend in that direction. So does that mean cremations are up?
Cremations are up in the Chicagoland area. We're almost at 50%. And I know Holy Sepulchre just opened up a new outdoor mausoleum that has a number of cremation, what we call niches.
How about that? You know, that's interesting.
I think it's in the book also. I think,
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
And thank you, sir. You're always welcome here. What are you working on now?
I am working on two really interesting books. One is dedicated to basically veterans of foreign wars and police officers who were killed in the line of duty.
Wow, okay.
And I think that is going to be a really interesting book. I'm going to tell their stories again and, if possible, photograph their graves. And the book that is actually coming out next is a book that's oriented more for kids, in which we put kids through the magic of artwork into famous nursery rhymes, totally different than our books on cemeteries. So the kids become characters.
Oh, that's cool.
In nursery rhymes. It's going to be a really, really fun book. Cool.
From the mind of Larry. Hey, you went to MIT. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
That's what we hear.
Yeah. Mr. Brownman, good to see you. You're always welcome here.
I appreciate it.
And again, it is called Chicago Eternal, E-T-E-R-N-A-L, just like you would expect. Get yours. We'll come back with Bill and Wendy, and we'll see how Kat's birthday party's going. Seems a little quiet right now. That's next on 720 WGN. One more quick break before we go. But, Catherine, happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
Well, I never asked you this. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I don't know.
No, we need an answer.
Rockstar?
Something cool. Yeah. I want to enjoy it.
I'm hoping there'll be money in that for
She's
you.
She's got musical chops like you would not believe.
Yes.
She's
awesome.
Fantastic.
And you know what? Can I tell you? You're a really good big sister. Your little brother's
not feeling good,
and you were doing a nice job of taking care of him.
You're way too good.
Yeah.
My big sister was not that nice to
me. I know behind closed doors, you pick on him, and you give him a hard time. But in front of us, nice con job. Very impressed by that. Thank you. Thank you, Kat.
That's why he gave you 20 bucks.
Yes. Don't say that out loud. Wilson Patrick only got three. Back with more in a moment. And Bill and Wendy next. Where's my mic? There it is. Bill and Wendy are here. Hope you guys had a nice weekend.
I did. I had a wonderful weekend. You, Bill?
Spectacular.
All right. I feel like we've had a good
talk. Stay tuned to find out more.
Stand by because it's going to start right now.